Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Today, we'd like to welcome Dr. Randy and Dana Stinson. Randy is the Senior Vice President for Academic Administration and Provost at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Randy and Dana have been married for 27 years, and Dana is a stay-at-home mom to their 8 children between the ages of 21 and 11, 5 of whom are adopted. They're a wealth of knowledge and experience, but more than that, they are incredibly dear friends. I've been sharpened and encouraged by their friendship, and I know that you all will be as well. So welcome, Randy and Dana. Thanks for being here today.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
You guys, I know this is a tough subject, and we would like to talk about adoption disruptions. And we are just so grateful for your transparency and your willingness to bring truth to this situation. Many people may not be aware that adoptions are disrupted anywhere from 10 to 25%. That is alarming. And so let's just start at the beginning and ask, what is disruption?
Well, some people define it different ways, and some people even use a different phrase. Some people call it refamilying. We still use the word disruption, and partially because that's exactly what it is. Disruption is when a family that has adopted a child, at some point for various reasons, they decide that that child no longer fits in their family, is not fitting well with their family, and they decide to give the child back up for adoption, or in some cases, put them in foster care.
Wow. And so I'm sure there are different types of disruptions that you guys have walked through. I know you've walked through this several times. What are the different types of disruptions you have seen, and kind of how do you label those? How do you explain those?
Yeah, we basically, and I'll let Dana weigh in here as well, but we basically, for us, we have come up with just basically 2 broad categories of disruption. One, we would call a necessary disruption. There are cases that we've seen over the years where a child is adopted into a home, and for various reasons, and it doesn't always happen this way, and I don't want to scare anybody, but for various reasons, the child becomes violent, dangerous, and it's not going to work. The family agrees it's not going to work, and so we would call that a necessary disruption, but we would affirm a necessary disruption in an adoption case when you would also do that with a biological child. And so there are cases where biological children go off the rails for various reasons, and it becomes necessary to remove the child from the home. Mm-hmm. And so we would say that there are necessary disruptions, but then we would use the other category of an unnecessary disruption. And that can be, we've seen situations where the parent is just irritated by the behavior of the child, you know, the child just doesn't seem to express levels of love that the parents are expecting, or some level of gratitude that the parent is expecting. And Dana might have some others.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that we've seen is that children don't, in these types of situations where they end in disruption, children are not necessarily meeting the expectations that the family has. Maybe their behaviors are not up to the family standard. Maybe their personality, something as simple as their personality,
are
putting to family. So those would characterize as unnecessary.
So I would like for you guys to let us know a little bit how disruption has affected your family and how you even came to understand this topic and how you've, you know, come into contact with this.
Yeah, so we have 8 children, 5 are adopted, and 3 of those adoptions are from families that found it necessary to disrupt in what we would call in the category of unnecessary disruption. So they felt it necessary. We would put them in the category of unnecessary disruptions. But nevertheless, on three different occasions, in three very unique situations, we received phone calls and conversations from families that decided that they needed to give the child back up for adoption. And in all three cases, we agreed to do it. And so that's how disruptions have affected our, we've never had to disrupt ourselves, mm-hmm. but we have been involved in three where we were the recipient of the child. And then in many others where we were not the recipient of the child, but tried to give advice and counsel.
How do you counsel a family who, if we're categorizing the unnecessary disruption, when you come into contact with people who are struggling with attachment with their child, or if it's a personality difference, or they don't necessarily do things the way our family has done things, and it's in their mind, you know, something that they can't overcome, how do you guys start at the beginning with them to know what direction to counsel them in?
Well, that's a great question, and I wish I had a happy answer for that, because sadly what happens is typically what we've found are families that end up disrupting contact us at a time when it's almost too late. And what I mean by that is they have typically struggled for anywhere between 2 to 5 years in the home before they actually recognize the problem is so great that they need to get help. And usually by the time they've contacted us, what it would take in order for these families to sort of right the ship and start over, a lot of times that both parents and the children are either unwilling or unable to make the necessary changes, and frankly, in a lot of cases, to repent and actually go back and really start over.
Right. What are some of the warning signs that you think families should look for? So let's say I bring home a child, and not all of the disruptions that you all have been the recipient of your children, were the kids even older or, you know, it's not really an age thing so much. It's just kind of the family dynamics. But, you know, what are some of the warning signs that that your pastor could be looking for, friends and family that you could look for in your own self? Because I feel like it's sometimes a lack of self-awareness even, and then it's gotten so far that there doesn't seem to be a turnaround. So what are some warning signs family ought to look for?
Well, one of the things I would say to that is, first, to temper your expectations as an adoptive parent. Many times we think that these kids, you know, ought to be hyper grateful because they got, you know, their own bedroom and a new pair of tennis shoes.
Right.
But you basically, in many cases, you've just taken them from everything that's familiar, and they don't necessarily immediately feel some sense of gratitude or even love and affection immediately. And so one of the things that happens is parents have a false expectation and they expect too much too soon. And when all of those things don't happen, they start to think, well, maybe we shouldn't have done this. Maybe we got the wrong kid. Maybe, you know, we're not right for this kid. But the warning signs that we have seen, one of the particular ones that is common in every situation, is when either one or both of the parents start to have a me against them attitude. And so they begin to take whatever the behaviors are, take them personally, and they put themselves at personal odds with the child. And that is one of the biggest warning signs that we've seen, is that as soon as that parent in particular begins to feel that way, they should immediately contact somebody, because in that case, a pastor is not going to recognize that,
right.
you know, because it's in such an early stage. But that's one of the key warning signs when a parent starts to take this personal and they either feel like it's us, our biological kids, and me against this kid is coming between us, this kid is disrupting the flow of our home. When you start to feel that way and you feel the putting blame on that kid, that is at least one of the key warning signs we've noticed. Dana may have more.
Yeah, I think one warning sign that you wouldn't actually see outwardly, but it's particularly, I think, a challenge for women, is that what happens a lot of times during adoption that's actually very surprising to a lot of women, what they believe to be just a natural sort of affection that they have toward their biological children. A lot of mothers, when they adopt, are surprised by the fact that 6 months maybe after they've brought this new child into the home and the newness wears off, they're surprised by the fact that they don't have a natural sort of inclination, a genuine affection toward this new child that they've brought in. And rather than expressing that verbally to a pastor or someone who is farther down the road in the adoption process, they feel shame mm-hmm. about that privately, and rather than understand that that is a natural process, they then begin to trust their feelings, so to speak, and think that something's wrong with the child. Why can't I love this child? Something must be wrong with the child. This has never happened to me before. And that leads to what I believe to be difficulties in the bonding process that the parents often put onto the newly adoptive child and say they're unable to attach. Mm. The child is unable to attach. When in fact, what we've seen in our cases and a lot of the other cases that we've actually counseled is that it's really one or both of the parents that have been unable to attach.
And you know, in the adoption world, as parents talk and say you get close to an adoptive mom and she starts sharing this with you, I've heard this so many times, but I do see that families who reach out and get help or get another family to pray with them and say, look, I'm struggling here. Would you pray for me? And really, you know, start hitting their knees over this. I have seen this really turn around, not every time, but when you have families that come to you and share this with you, what do you think is the best thing we can say or tell ourselves, or how's the best way we get help when we see that maybe we're not bonding with this new child and we are beginning to see ourselves transfer that frustration onto the child when the child can't handle that, mm-hmm. you know, the child's not equipped to carry that. And how do we help parents be the adult in the room and get past these feelings?
Well, the first thing I think is what you mentioned is they've got to get somebody else involved, and particularly somebody that is a little further down the road in their adoption situation, so that what we've tried to do is help parents, adoptive parents, just adjust to this new normal that this is not a problem necessarily. This is normal to have some challenges in the bonding process, to be even in some cases confused. And again, and sometimes the kid just has a harder time as well. And so one of the what we would say is get somebody else involved. And then when you do that, what we would say, if we were the family being involved, is just to help them adjust to this new normal. They're not crazy. This is not the end. And that this is not insurmountable.
Right. And we have to choose.
We have to choose to love, and we have to choose to make that decision every day that even if we don't feel it, that we still move in that direction and do things to help promote the bonding process and the attaching process. And those things are hard to do. And sometimes we, you know, like Dana said, we start to trust our heart and we think, oh, I don't feel that way. Yeah. So I don't want to do it. So,
yeah, one of the things we've learned in the adoption process in general with all of them is you, even biblically speaking, you can learn to love somebody that just drops in your family. You can learn to love somebody, and it doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
And the other thing is, I think it's very critical. One of the things that we have noticed in families that sort of head in this direction are that one of the spouses usually goes silent. And that is dangerous, because I remember when we brought our girls home from Taiwan, our first adoptions, they were not a disruption. They were 5 and 3. And I remember having the experience at about month 4 inwardly that I was not just feeling that natural, nurturing kind of bond that I thought, and I was very conflicted and I did feel shamed. And I do know that even during that time, I responded to my older daughter improperly and was just starting to feel my heart turn against her in that way. And I remember Randy pulling me aside and saying to me during that time, you know, you can't do this. You can't act this way. You might feel this way, but whatever it takes for you to respond to her in a proper, godly way is what you're going to have to do until you feel it. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to trust that just obeying the Lord and loving her as one made in the image of God is going to have to be enough for right now. Mm-hmm. And he called me out on that. And I remember thinking to myself, thank you, Lord, that I have a husband who's pushing me into doing what's right. And I feel that what is lacking is the courage for sometimes the spouse to look at the other spouse and say, you know what, I understand you feel that way, but we have to push through this and move forward. And so you cannot remain silent. Mm.
What do you tell to your biological kids if they're the ones that are trying to, because kids are going to notice things. So let's say your older 3 biological kids had seen that response that you had with your oldest adopted daughter, and they were feeling those feelings toward the new kids as well, and they started to put a wedge between, like, you know what I'm saying? Well, Mom, she did this or she did that. So kind of, you know, agging it on a little bit. What do you say to your biological kids who aren't feeling it as well? Because I feel like they can then, you know, try to divide and conquer to get their way.
Well, I think it's similar to what you would do in a situation. Let's just say I might respond inappropriately to one of my biological children.
Right, exactly.
And so as much as I can and as much as I acknowledge it, I would in turn, if other kids observe me responding inappropriately, I would do the same thing. Apologize. I shouldn't have talked to Gunner that way or Georgia that way. That's not a way a dad is supposed to talk to his children. Will you guys forgive me for doing that? I think it's the same acknowledging there's going to be sin in this. Mm-hmm. And so just acknowledging when we do sin in those ways to let the other children know, yes, I did do that. But I'm also letting you know that was sin and I shouldn't have done that, so that they in their own heart don't begin to develop and give themselves some kind of permission to just start treating the other children the same way you did.
Right. Absolutely. I want to change gears here just a minute and focus more, kind of turn our attention now to the child that was adopted, brought home, thought he had a forever family, mm-hmm. and then that ends. How do you, Randy and Dana, how did you, when you brought those three precious ones into your home, I know it wasn't easy, I'm assuming it wasn't easy at our house, but how do you settle forever in their hearts mm-hmm. that I know you too, I know your integrity, I know your walk with the Lord, I know you're in this until the Lord takes you home. But how do you get that across to that child that, oh, they've been told this before,
right.
I've gotten a forever family. How do you resolve that with them?
Well, you have, I mean, I'll jump in. I just remember in particular with our little girl we adopted at 2.5, she was 2.5 years old. And it, even 2 years after we had her, we would drop her off to Sunday school and she would ask me, "You're coming to get me, right?
Right.
You're coming back to get me," even after 2 years right. in. And so it just takes time. You just have to realize it's going to take a long time, depending on how old they are and how, you know, how they were personally affected by this. And each kid is affected at different levels. But we just kept, I mean, it's very sounds very simple, but we just had to keep in mind how long this might take. And we just kept reminding them all the time, and still do, in fact. Even kids, we've had our 2.5-year-old now for 10 years, mm-hmm. almost 10 years. And we still remind them that this is a forever situation.
Yeah, I remember when we got our 5.5-year-old son, and it was a very difficult situation that he had come from. And just due to some things in our family, when we ended up bringing him home, I was the one actually that brought him home. And even though he was ready, he didn't want to get in the car with me. And he was running around the front yard over and over and over again in circles. And finally, the family that was disrupting the dad in that home put him in the car for me. And he got in the car and we got halfway down the road. And I just could sense that he was unsettled. And I looked back there and I told him, I said, "Listen, what happened today was wrong. And you should not have had to go through this situation." And I said, I want you to know a couple of things. Number one, this was not your fault. You did not do one thing wrong mm-hmm. to deserve what has happened to you today. But I can assure you, number two, that this will never happen to you again.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And over and over again, for the first year, the one thing that these kids need to know is this will never happen again.
Right.
And it takes a long time for them to really believe that and trust that. They want to, but experientially, they have to experience it, in other words, mm-hmm. for to believe it.
Right.
And we've seen each one of them and other families who have adopted kids that are disrupted, we've seen them, each one of them in their own time, come to finally realize this is my home.
Right.
What we're seeing in the adoption community right now with the maybe growing number of disruptions is similar to what the church experienced maybe 30 years ago, where, you know, divorce started to be more common. And what churches did in response is they came up and, you know, you can't get married in any good church now without going through some sort of premarital counseling.
Right. Right.
And what we think should be happening is some sort of pre-adoption counseling conversations to help a family decide if this really is for them. Because I think a lot of people adopt for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. They, you know, everybody else is doing it, and so they feel like they need to do it. they do it because they feel like they feel guilty if they don't do it. They sometimes a marriage is in trouble and a couple decides this will bring them closer together.
Right.
And as y'all know, kids don't fix marriages.
Definitely not. Yeah. They just increase the stress level.
Yep.
But it's funny how a lot of families will think, well, this, and it does, the planning process actually does give the appearance that the couple's getting closer together because they've got a common goal. They're yeah. talking about it a lot. It makes them feel closer, but then the kid gets there mm-hmm. and it didn't fix the marriage. It just made it feel like it was getting better. And then now they've got another kid and it didn't solve the problem that they thought it was going to solve. And so we're just big advocates for churches to sit down with these couples. Adoption is not for everybody.
Right.
I think it's kind of like what I would say about missions, either go or help somebody go.
Right.
But it's not every single person is supposed to adopt. And so we just would hope that churches would help these couples think it through and help get to the motive and other areas of their life to make sure that this is actually something where they're counting the cost.
I remember when we were bringing home our son, and so we were interrupting birth order. He was 11. Mm-hmm. We had those two little girls and then the older kids. And our agency was a secular agency, but I have to hand it to them. The social worker that worked for them took us to the mat on bringing him home. Mm-hmm. And almost made me a little mad, but Kevin Ezell was on the other phone, so he handled it, you know. But it was tough questions right. that we needed to be asked. And it really made us step back and say, wait a minute, you know, really dig. We stayed up all night one night just talking about it and praying through it. And it didn't change our decision. Obviously, we're so grateful it didn't. But she did challenge us to look at this and say, do you know what you're signing up for? And she just laid it out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad she did.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's just choosing to be educated about it and to not just when someone comes and says, hey, we think we want to do this, to not just immediately start cheerleading, but to say, hey, let's have a conversation about this and let's talk through it. And it's easy to get super excited with people, but it's a far better idea to sit down and say, hey, let's sit down together and pray about this and see if this is a good fit for your family. So I think those are amazing.
Yeah, most pastors that have been in the pastorate very long that do premarital counseling have at some point in time had to tell a young couple, I don't think this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not because he's still pro-marriage, he's still pro-family, but he can see the writing on the wall that this couple probably ought not to get married. And I think the same could be true. Adoption is a feel-good thing, mm-hmm. But it would not be wrong for a pastor or anybody else to maybe sit down with a couple and say, I don't think you guys ought to do this right now.
Right. Well, it's a sad statistic of 10 to 25%. And we just really hope that by having this conversation that we can bring some things to light and help people really consider and pray through and seek wise counsel before they determine that they want to bring a child into their family. Because it's far more difficult on the child, which is the focus of having to disrupt as to not. So we really appreciate your conversation about this and we would really like to talk to you a little bit more. So if you guys can hang around, we'd like to talk to you about another issue that you guys have parented through. So thanks for being with us.
All right. Our pleasure. Thanks.
You have been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.